Good afternoon, everyone. It's truly a privilege and an honor to talk about this topic to you all, this wonderful crowd. I'm very passionate about this topic, and Shmiras HaLashon really is something that's relevant to every facet of our lives, not just business. It's relevant to relationships. It's relevant to shidduchim. It's relevant to any kind of interaction between Jewish people. Anyone who speaks or listens to speech needs to be aware of the laws of Shmiras HaLashon. So if anyone here does not speak or listen to anyone who speaks, then this speech may be superfluous, but if you do relate and interact with others, hopefully you will benefit from what we are going to say. So I want to just give an outline of what we're going to do. We're going to be talking about information that's relevant to the hiring and firing of employees. We're going to be talking about information that's relevant to either accepting or declining a job. We're going to be talking about information with regards to assessing job performance or ability. We're going to be talking about assessing harm or detriment, either to the employer or the employee. And we're going to talk about general reviews, Bezras Hashem. Now I'm going to divide the session into three parts: volunteering information even when not being asked, asking for information that you think is relevant to you, and responding to information that was requested or asked from you. And the halacha is different in each of those scenarios. Now, I just want to give a little bit of introduction. I want everyone to appreciate the gravity or the severity of the outcome of what could happen from what someone says or from what someone decides not to say. So first of all, there's a risk of nixing a potentially appropriate employee or job through a speech. In other words, maybe I say something that convinces someone not to take a job or not to hire someone for the job, and really I should not have said that, and the shidduch between the employer and employee would have been a good one, but because I wasn't careful about what I said, I harmed either the employer from hiring a terrific employee or the employee from taking a terrific job, and it would have been a win-win situation, and I ruined it for them. That's one possibility. There's another possibility in the other direction, and that's facilitating an inappropriate employee or job by refraining from saying something. So that would be something like this. Let's say I know that the employee would be detrimental to the employer, and I didn't share that information with the employer, or I know that it would be horrible for the employee to take this job because the work environment would be one that he can't handle or tolerate. And when I say he throughout the session, I mean he or she. So even if I might say it b'lashon zachar, I mean he or she. Everything applies to both genders. Now, so refraining from saying something could be equally harmful because I sat on the sidelines and I might be the only person who's privy to this information and I said nothing. Well, that's equally harmful. And finally, I want just to really scare everybody, I want you, everybody, to pay attention that whether you speak or you don't, what you do could be relevant to one's livelihood and that of all of his or her dependents, which means their children who may go hungry could be on your shoulders. Well, that's exciting. So really, what we say or what we don't is huge. Yet unfortunately, in the workplace, as we call it in Israel, chofshi, chofshi, everybody just, you know, speaks. It's not just in the workplace, but we're focusing on the workplace. So, as we said, the first part of this session is going to be volunteering information when you're not asked. Now, you could be a coworker, and you notice something about an employee, and you want to go to your boss and say something to your boss. Your boss didn't ask. Your boss has no idea that you know. Or you could be someone who's not a coworker, and you're aware of someone who's doing something wrong or something harmful in the business, or someone who's interviewing for a job. And regardless of whether you're a coworker or an outsider, you may have information that's relevant. And when I say relevant, I mean to either party, which means either you have information relevant to the person considering the job, and maybe they won't want to consider it, or you have information relevant to the employer that he or she should not consider hiring this person. Now, it goes without saying, ladies and gentlemen, that if what you want to say is praiseworthy and true, please feel free to do so as much as you'd like. Knock yourselves out. But we're talking about, primarily throughout this session, where unfortunately what you want to say is negative, and there may be a halachic justification and perhaps even a mitzvah to say this negative information. But again, if you're worried about praising the person as true, go ahead, call them up and say, you don't have to be asked, and the halacha is pretty free with that, typically. All right. Now, so let's, we're going to hopefully have time for questions at the end. Now, okay, let's talk about the obligation to reveal negative information. When I say negative information, I'm talking about a fault or a deficiency, either with the employer or the employee to the other party, without having been asked. Now, I want to lay the guidelines, and if you understand what we're about to say, it'll make the rest of the session much easier. This is a yesod. This is an ideal that is put forth by many of the mefarshim on Shmiras HaLashon, and it's like this. In order for you to know whether or not you should reveal something that's negative to one of the parties, how do you know that the other person is even interested in this information or that the information is relevant? No one asked you. No one asked for your 2 cents. And we don't just want you to put on a cape, fly through the window, and say, here I am to save the day. That is not an appropriate approach. So how do you know? So one of two things is brought down, and it's logical. Either you know the parties well enough to know that this type of fault or deficiency is something that the other cannot tolerate. It doesn't have to be a deficiency or fault that no one in this situation would tolerate. It has to be something that they would not tolerate. So let's say you know the employer, and you know that this particular fault of the person he's about to interview, and he may not see this fault, is one that the employer would not be able to tolerate. And he'd want to know. So even though this is a fault that others would tolerate, since you know this particular employer, and you know that he or she would not tolerate it, the halacha is that you'd be allowed to initiate and volunteer the information even though you weren't asked. But maybe the employer didn't know to ask you, whether you're a coworker or an outsider. And the same would work the other way around. Maybe it's information, it's a fault about the employer or the employer's work environment, that for this particular person who's interviewing for the job, it's something that he or she cannot tolerate, even though the typical person would tolerate it. So here, the critical point is that you're assessing the ability of the person to tolerate this fault rather than whether people at large would tolerate the fault. Does everybody hear that? That's what you're doing. The other option is where you have no idea. You don't know the employer. You don't know the employer. Maybe you work for him, but you've never had two words with him. You don't know what your employer likes or wants or whatever. You work for him. You get your paycheck. And here someone's coming in, and you know that person has a fault. But you have no idea if this fault would either hinder the job or the employer's tolerance of him or whatever it is. So here, you have to assess the fault itself. Unless you want to walk into the employer and ask him, you know, could you give me a list of faults that you can't tolerate? That's not practical, and I don't recommend that you do that. He might think you're talking about yourself. So don't do that. But so how would you know, since you don't know the employer, you don't know where what his tolerance level is for various types of faults. So how do you know if this is something that the employer would want to know or need to know? And that's the operative term. You can't just share negative information about someone if it's not relevant in one of those ways. So here, the halacha is quite clear, and that is, if it's a chisar, and if it's a fault, if it's a deficiency, that's to the point where most people in this environment would not tolerate it. It's what we call a significant or a major fault. That would be something that you can assume that this employer would not want or the employee would not want. Now, is it possible that the employer is one of the 20% of society who would tolerate this fault? Yes, but you don't have to consider that. In other words, 80% of society, I'm just giving arbitrary numbers, would not tolerate this fault. 20% do. Do I have to think, well, gee, I can't warn the employer because maybe he's part of the 20%. That don't tolerate this fault. I don't have to think that way. I have to be reasonable and fair in my judgment. And I assess that since the typical person would not tolerate this particular level of fault, then I'm allowed to approach the boss, whether I'm a coworker or an outsider, and say, or whether it's a review or an assessment, and it's something that I'm initiating. An assessment may be something I'm initiating, but we'll get to that later, time permitting. I'm allowed to volunteer that information. Now, let's talk about the level of fault. Now, again, just so that no one lost me, I'm talking about the second barometer, not the first. The first is where I know the boss, or I know the employee, the potential employee, and I assess, based on my knowledge of their likes and dislikes, that this particular chisaron is something they would not tolerate. Then I don't have to gauge the chisaron in terms of how people at large would tolerate the chisaron. I know that it's not a match for this particular person. I'm talking about barometer number two. Barometer number two is where I don't know the employer or the employee well enough to make that call, but I'm actually focusing on the fault or the deficiency itself. And I'm trying to gauge whether it's serious enough that most people in this situation would not tolerate that fault. Okay, is everybody with me? That's an important piece. So here it is. We're going to divide chisronos or faults into three categories, the middle one being a little gray. Let's talk about a very significant or a major fault or a chisaron. And here, the assumption is that most people would not tolerate them. Now, what's the definition of a major or significant fault or deficiency? So that would be a fault or a deficiency that would either hinder the employee's ability to adequately perform his or her job, or it would hinder the employee's ability to tolerate his work environment, meaning the other way around. I'd want to warn the employee from taking the job. So again, what if the chisaron is so severe that most people would not tolerate a work environment with this chisaron? Or it's so severe that most employers would not tolerate an employee with this chisaron? I'm good to go. I can go up to the employer or the employee and say, listen, you're interviewing for this job. You need to know that this is the work environment, and it's going to be very hard. I assume, I don't know you well enough, but I'm warning you. I mean, you can tell me you don't mind, but I'm just warning you that this is the work environment. Now, let me give some examples of this. So, for example, let's say a seriously flawed character trait, not a minor character trait, seriously. For example, let's say the employee uncontrollably loses his temper. So I know that most people would not want to hire such a person. Most people. Again, uncontrollably loses his temper. Uncontrollably means you don't want to be in the same room as this person. So you're not, well, should I tell the employer? I mean, maybe he can. I mean, some people could tolerate that. If you have a shield, I don't know. I would. You can make that call, and the halacha would say you can tell the employer. You got it wrong. The employer says, oh, I don't care. I like a man with spunk. Okay, you warned him, and he is willing to hire this person. Then I did my duty, and you step aside. Don't say, really? Are you sure? I think you should think about it again. Don't do that. The Chafetz Chaim doesn't let you do that. You warn him. You said what you said. You don't have to cheer him on or push him in a direction, unless he's your brother or something like that. But otherwise, you can leave him be. You know, if he's your brother, maybe you can push him a little bit more. So you did your thing. Or another example. Let's say the potential employee lies. They don't tell the truth consistently. It's very hard for most people in a work environment to interact with a person who rarely, if ever, tells the truth. I don't know if almost everyone in this room has dealt with a person who doesn't tell the truth. It is so frustrating in the work environment. You don't know where you're coming or going. You don't know what to expect. Honesty is huge. I'm not talking about a person who periodically lies, which is not good, but if they consistently lie, and every time they open their mouths, you don't know if what's coming out of their mouth is true or false, you're done. You can't have anyone in this room who is an employer knows you can't have an employee like that. You know, why did you come late? You know, oh my gosh, I missed the bus. He overslept. You know, you can't have a working relationship with such a person. What if the potential employee you know steals? In the past, he's stolen. So you're worried about, you know, you have to warn the employer. I mean, he could walk off with your typewriter. Well, you don't have typewriters anymore. Your computer, your whatever it is. You know, forget about pens, paper clips, erasers, paper, all that stuff. So the point is that is a serious character flaw that really hinders the ability of the job description, of most job descriptions, and that would be able to be said. Another one would be, let's say they report information to the competitor. Now, I'm talking even if it's true information. Of course, if they're reporting false information to your competitor, that is extremely harmful. But unfortunately, often employees have a history, like you know that someone's interviewing for a job, and they share private information of your business with your competitor. Now, I know, like, for example, I'm a principal of a high school, so I call principals all the time, and we share information, but I ask permission. Like, I would never call a teacher under a principal and say, can you share with me how you do this or how you do that without the principal's permission? And sometimes I'll call a principal, and he or she will say to me, Rabbi Stengel, I need to think about that. I need to think about that. If that's something that is in our best interest to share, I say, absolutely. I don't want you to share the information with me without thinking it through, and you know, you think that you're comfortable, and so on and so forth. So if you have an employee who's interviewing for a job, and he or she has a history of being very loose-lipped with private information, information that could be detrimental if it got out. Maybe you're patenting something, or maybe you're dealing something a certain way, and you charge a fee for it. And if everybody would know about it, you would lose that fee or something like that. That's certainly something that's very significant. Another example would be I had a case brought before me a while ago where there was a person who had a history of taking jobs and then suing his employers. You know, that's terrible. I mean, that's how he made his parnassa, not from the job, but he'd work for a little while and then sue his employer and then go work for another employer and sue him. And you can make a nice living if you do that, but I think I'd want to know if someone came and interviewed by me and they had a history of doing this. I would certainly want to know, and most people would want to know. I can assume then that, well, I didn't ask the boss. What do you think? He wants to know, and I'm allowed to tell him. So again, you get the idea. It's a serious character flaw I'm talking about. Other examples of something serious would be a definitive health or emotional issue that would hinder the performance of the job at hand. And that would include the environment too, like from the employer or the employee. So it has to be something definitive and something that's severe. I'll give you an example of where it's not severe, and it's important, and this would kind of give us a balance. Let's say you know someone gets excessively anxious when they speak in public. I get anxious when I speak in public. I'm kind of anxious now, but that's okay. I deal with it. I'm fine. But what if a person gets overly anxious and they literally fall apart? I wouldn't be giving the lecture if that were me, Baruch Hashem. I'm not. But what if a person is? Now, here's the thing. Could you call the boss and say, this person falls apart if they're asked to speak in public? Well, logically, that would depend. Does the job at hand call for that requirement? Does the job description call for speaking in public? What if you don't ever have to ask this person to speak in public? What if you never ask your employees to speak in public? What right do you have to call the boss and say, oh my gosh, this guy or this lady gets so anxious when they speak in a room. If there's more than three people, they literally tremble with fear. Now, you might justify that and say, well, I think it's relevant because, well, you know, they get so nervous, maybe it'll spill over somewhere else. You can't make that call. So here the halacha would say that if the person asks you, you know, it's important for me that the person has the level of confidence that would exhibit itself in such and such a scenario, okay. But if you don't know that they're looking for that, and the job description at hand, either because you're there or you happen to know the job description, does not require for the ability to speak in public without getting anxious, you wouldn't be able to call. And the same thing with some other form of anxiety. I know people who get anxious when they fly. They can't eat or drink the whole day before. They can't sleep. On the flight, they fall apart. So here's the thing. If you have a job where your employees are not required to fly, well, what's it negeah? What's the relevance? Now you could argue, well, if he goes to visit his mother-in-law on Shabbos, he'll come back a nervous wreck. Okay, I that's pushing it. At the end of the day, the job description does not call for your employees to fly. Now, where would it be relevant? What if you're hiring an employee and you want him to fly all over America every week to do this? That would be relevant, and that might be very serious. Then you call and say, listen, this may not be your guy because it's going to take him a whole day to, you know, kind of calm down from the effects of flying. That could be relevant. So here you begin to see that it has to be relevant to the job description at hand. You can't just say that this is relevant because, you know, most people would want to know. Most people would want to know if it's part of the job description. Another example of something that could be significant but not necessarily is lack of experience. Now, this is not so relevant because usually when a person interviews a prospective employee, what's one of the first questions they ask is, what's your, it's usually on the resume, but like, for example, if I'm hiring a teacher, one of my first questions is, where and for how long have you taught? And I already know the answer because I have the resume, but I want to talk about it. So like, it's very rare that you're going to get an employer who doesn't know that their prospective employee lacks critical experience. But let's say this is the situation at hand. You have to be aware of two things, and I just want you to think about it so that you understand. Like, if you give thought to what you're about to do, and that's the critical thing, ladies and gentlemen, with Shmiras Halashen, you need to think before you speak. If you do, most time, most people are intelligent enough to realize, maybe I shouldn't say this, what I'm about to say. The problem is most of us either don't think that at all, or we do, but an hour after we said what we should not have said. I cannot tell you how many times I get a phone call, and it goes something like, Rabbi Stengel, I want to know if what I said was okay. And I'm thinking to myself, why couldn't you have called me before you said what you said and ask, I would like to say such and such, is it okay? But that's typically not the phone call. And what's the purpose? I answer those calls because the person, I can almost feel the heart palpitations through the phone wire. The person's so nervous that they did something wrong, and it's usually relevant to a shidduch or something, or a job, and it's major, and they can't sleep, and they you know, then I have to assess whether maybe I should even just tell them that it's okay and have them put them out of their misery. But really, the ideal is to think before. And if we really think, much of the time we could kind of be on the right track. So here's the thing. With regards to lack of crucial experience, and I mean crucial experience, experience needed for the job, so you have to be aware that they're not training on the job. Like, there are jobs that agree to train a prospective employee. You have to know. You can't just call the boss. Like, what if you call the boss, and here's what happens. You tell him, do you realize, Joe, that this person has absolutely no experience? Now imagine if you make that phone call, and they were going to train him, but when they hear it again, this is a psychological effect, and the Chafetz Chaim brings this in the Birmaim Chaim in a few places. If you push something, even if a person already agreed to it, they could change their mind because, well, I'm hearing from another person, and he keeps drilling, you know, the third person that called me in the last week that says this person lacks experience, maybe I don't want to train him. Maybe everybody's emphasizing the fact that this person doesn't have experience. You don't want to make that phone call if the fact that he lacks experience is not critical for the employer. So you really want to find out, if you can, before you pick up that phone and volunteer information, if it's relevant. If you feel strongly that it is relevant, then make the call. All right, that's the idea. Now, the quasi area, and this really depends. I'll give you an example where what I'm about to say is significant, but it doesn't always have to be. Let's say someone's a procrastinator. Now, there are employers that this gets under their skin. They just cannot stand hiring a person who procrastinates, who takes it, you know, takes them. They're not, you know, they're not efficient with their time. And now, for sure, if they're paid by the hour and you're not getting 60 minutes for your buck, or let's say you pay them by the job, so you're not really losing money because you're paying them the same amount regardless of how long it takes to perform the task at hand. But the problem is it's time sensitive, and you need the job by a certain time. So the fact that they procrastinate actually is detrimental to you, not in terms of money, but in terms of having the project done on time. That could be a significant chisaron, and one that you can assume is something that they'd want to know. Right. Now, so that would be also anything to do with time, arriving late, leaving early, leaving in the middle of the day, absent. You know, I'm talking, let's say they have a history of being absent at the last job, or you're a on the job itself, the boss could typically know or see whether that's true. I mean, if bosses have time cards or whatever, there's a svar in some of the poskim that if he doesn't, nisratza, meaning obviously it's not important to the boss. I don't know if I'm so masking to that svara, but there is such a svara. But the point is that if you know, and someone's interviewing for a job and they have a history of coming late or not being there the whole time and not really being yashrustig about it, that could be something that's a significant chisaron. Huadin, so too, if they spend a time on the job doing personal things without asking permission from their employer, those things could be significant. Now, minor faults and minor deficiencies. And again, we're talking about the second barometer, which is you don't know the employer-employee well enough to know whether the chisaron at hand is something that they wouldn't tolerate. You're trying to assess it based upon how most people would view or tolerate this particular chisaron. So something that would be minor, and therefore when I say minor, I mean that in order to reveal this, you really need to be asked. You can't assume that the employer or the employee would want to know this. Typically, there are exceptions. So for example, importance but not crucial. Appearance. Many employers like an employee who appears professional, who appears well-groomed. What if this person does not? Well, you can't just assume that an employer wants that. What if he's very efficient at his job, but he doesn't dress the part so well? So you, before you pick up the phone, you need to know that the employer is machbit about that, cares about that. And if you're not sure, I would stay out, because at the end of the day, it's not likely to hinder the performance of the job. So I would stay out. Another example of a chisaron that's not major is confidence. In other words, some employers want employees who exhibit and exude confidence. Now, confidence is not necessarily indicative of job performance. I have teachers who are amazing but constantly need reassurance that they're doing a good job. Oh, gosh, I'm not doing a good job. It's more common maybe by the female side of the mechitza, but I'm sure it happens on the male side of the mechitza, too. In other words, I have a certain teacher who's so good, yet she constantly thinks she's not performing up to par. And no matter how many times I tell her, you're amazing, she thinks I'm just being nice. So there are people. Now, so I want you to, why am I saying this? Because it is possible to have a potential employee, you're interviewing someone, who does not exude confidence, but is amazing at his or her job. That doesn't necessarily mean that there's going to be any issue with the job. So then you really can't make that call and say, well, you should know that the person you're considering for the job really questions his or her ability to do the job, when in fact you know they do an awesome job and they have this thing in their head where, you know, they're not sure of it and their ego needs to be stroked and that kind of thing. So therefore, this is something that you would have to be asked. You couldn't just assume that they need this information. Another example is intelligence. Now, some of you are thinking, like, what? So here's the thing. Many jobs do not require a high level of intelligence, especially if it's just a low-level employee and they just have to do, you know, pick up something, bring something. They have to be on time. They have to know how to get placed. They don't have to be super intelligent. So here, if let's say you know that there's a person who's applying for a job who is below, let's just say below average intelligence, whatever that means. So what? So what? Now, if, you know, and again, it's almost not relevant that the boss who needs a very superior, you know, superiorly intelligent guy for the job missed that. You know, so, but typically, I'm just saying that intelligence does not have to be a significant fault. As long as they're intelligent enough to do the job, you're hiring someone to deliver newspapers, they have to be able to follow a route, they have to be on time, they have to be able to read numbers on a house, you know, whatever the job calls for. So they don't have to be super intelligent. And he could have a master's degree from MIT. Okay, that's fine. And he decides to deliver newspapers. But the point is that in order for intelligence to be a chisaron that matters, either you know the employer, and the employer just has this thing that I want all my employees to be very intelligent. Okay, then in that case, you'd really be able to answer the question if he's asking, or if you don't, or if you don't, or you know the employer and he wants that, but if not, you couldn't make that call. Another example, although some of you might think this is the person nice? That is not a significant chisaron. I cannot tell you how many workplaces are so efficient, yet nobody's nice. It's true. It's like, it's so often. I once got a call, whatever, from a lady who had a business, who owned a business somewhere years ago. She calls me and she says, Rabbi Stengel, I want to ask you something. Someone is interviewing for a job. I want to know, is she nice? So I started saying, oh, she's so efficient and she does an amazing job. No, you're not listening to me. I heard her. I says, I want to know if she's nice. I said, I'm telling you, I tried again. She said, Rabbi Stengel, I have an office full of people that are highly efficient and get the job done. But no one is nice. I need a nice person. I need her to be a this kind of a person. Is she that? I paused and, well, that was it. And I was really, you know, she's entitled to ask that. And if that's what she wants, well, then I have to answer. I said, look, you don't have to say she's not. You can say, you could probably find a nicer person. That's a nicer way of saying it. But you don't have to say it in a bad way. But, you know, she understood. But here she is telling me what she wants. But barring that, you can't just assume that simply because a person isn't pleasant and sweet and lovely, that they're not good for the job. Maybe someone wants, I mean, the hospital's hiring a neurosurgeon. I want the best neurosurgeon. You're hiring a mole for your son. You want the most efficient mole. You don't care. I mean, you might care a little bit. He is his bedside manner. He's smiling. Okay, maybe, maybe not. But if you had a choice between one who smiles and you're going to take the best one. So here, too, when it comes to a job description, unless you know that this is something that they're machbit about, you would not be able to make that call. That's my point. It's not a chisaron atzum. This would be relevant, by the way, to the employee and the employer. Maybe someone's interviewing for a job and you want to tell them the boss is very mean. The boss is just, it's impossible to get along with him. So you can't necessarily, well, if it's impossible, maybe if it's to that degree, but let's say he's just not nice. You can't make that call and assume the employee would not want the job. You'd have to, you know, either know the employee or get that information somehow. You wouldn't be able to make that call on your own. Then the lowest level are what I call personal preferences. For sure, here you wouldn't be able to say anything. So, for example, there are some employers, a few, who want to be compatible with their employees. Maybe they spend a lot of time with them. So, for example, an employer might want to possess similar character traits with his employee, or life goals, or business goals, or general interests. All that are personal preferences. They have no bearing whatsoever on the job, and there for sure, if you knew that the interests, the outside of work interests, you know, the employee likes tennis and the employer likes going on hikes, you know, now the employer might want someone to share his goal, assuming like they're the same gender and they would share that goal or whatever, but that's not something that that you would call on your own. They'd have to really tell you, like, you know, Yochanan, this is so important to me. Then on Sundays I play tennis with my employees. Okay, fine. Then he's telling me. I think I tell the potential employee that that's part of the job description also. But put that aside. Okay, now let's talk for a moment about revealing the fault. So, okay, there is still one thing we have to keep in mind, and that is, and I alluded to this earlier. What if you assess that the employer already knows about this fault, or the employee already knows? Either because you heard them talk about it, or because everybody knows about it. Let's say this is something that we call golui lakol. In other words, everybody knows that this employer is just not a nice person, or this employee is not a nice person. Everybody in town knows about it. So you assume, you really feel like the employer knows. Here the Chafetz Chaim says you would not be able to warn the employer, because what you're doing is you're strengthening something that he already knows, and your job is not to convince him. We alluded to that earlier. Again, unless he's related to you, that would be an exception, or a very close friend. But other than that, you don't just call someone that you, in other words, this happens all the time. A person calls an employer who's, and people do this to me. I'm considering taking someone into the school, let's say, and I'm aware of her faults, and I decide, you know what, I'm going to roll up my sleeves, and this is going to be my project now, right? Okay, so I'm willing to do that. And then I have three people who think they mean well, and they say, Rabbi Stengel, are you insane? What's wrong with you? You're not busy enough? Aren't you busy enough? What do you want to take this girl for? Now, what are they doing? They know that I know. So what happens psychologically? If enough people call me and say I'm insane, I kind of begin to feel like I'm insane, right? I mean, I'm human. So you're not doing me any tivus. I'm aware of it. Leave me be. Let me make it. I'm an adult. I'm making a decision. This is part of my job description. You don't have to convince me. Unless you're my mother, you don't have to call me and convince me. So here the Chafetz Chaim says, if you know that the employer or the employee knows this chisaron, but you feel they're crazy. I mean, seriously, why are you considering this chisaron? Don't make the call. They're aware of it. Let them make their own cheshbon hanefesh. And if they're willing to give it a shot, who are you to stop? And it's that nagia to shidduchim. It's nagia to so many places. It's not incumbent upon you to convince someone that the decision they're making in good faith is an incorrect decision, unless, again, you're a close relative, confidant, mentor, or something like that. Otherwise, stay out. Okay, that's if you feel he knows. What if it's something that you feel most people know, but you suspect the employer or the employee doesn't know? in that case you would make the phone call because it's a chisaron of a very high caliber and you're not really sure. Now, there is a possibility that he does know and you calling might tilt the scale, but at the same token, the risk of him or her not knowing is significant enough that the halacha allows you to come in and try to make sure they know that information. Now we're going to part two. We'll start part two and we'll continue next year maybe, but part two. Oh gosh. Okay, part two. Part two is asking for information. Now remember, everything we said about volunteering information would also include answering the questionnaire or, you know, the questionnaire is not specific enough to be considered as if someone's asking you a question unless the boss put work into writing the questionnaire. For example, let's say the boss calls all the staff members and says, I wrote a question, stayed up last night till 2 in the morning, and I wrote a questionnaire with 5 questions that are very important to me. Well, that's like he's asking you a question. But let's say he said, I downloaded a questionnaire from questionnaire.com. And it looked good, so just answer all the questions. And the employer is admitting that he put no thought whatsoever into the relevance of the questions and whether he even cares about those questions. That's not considered asking a question. That would mean that you'd have to gauge on the questionnaire every question to see, is this something that I feel would either be relevant to my boss knowing him, or it's a chisaron that most people would not tolerate. And that's very cumbersome, and I pity you if you're put in that situation, but you'd have to judge each question separately. But what we're talking about here, but a questionnaire where the boss tells you, I wrote the questionnaire. These are things that are important to me. That's no different than the boss sitting down with you and saying, Ve'ela hadvarim asher yikaru, these are the things that bother me. That's fine. You can do that. All right, so that's just what we learned before. If I had time, I'll get to the reviews, but for now, I want to get to asking. Now, what happens if you're the employer or you're the employee potential? In other words, I'm interviewing for a job, and I want to call people and say, what's the workplace like? Is it tolerable? Now, obviously, I'm setting myself up for hearing negative information. That's the whole point. Or I'm the potential employer, and I call a few people and say, I'm interviewing Ploni. What can you tell me? And that's what we all do. When I am interviewing a girl for high school from out of town or from another school or whatever, what do you think I do? I make phone calls and I call. And what am I expecting to hear? Well, I don't know what I'm expecting, but what I know I could hear, I could certainly hear negative information. So what are the parameters of asking for information in a business-related setting specifically and as they apply? So first of all, the halacha is unequivocal. One is allowed, permitted, and even encouraged to ask for relevant information. And the reason for this basically is to prevent possible harm or arguments later or worse, chilul Hashem. So I want to make sure that I'm not putting myself in a situation where I'm going to incur some kind of detriment to myself. And, you know, and I entered a situation that will be harmful for me. So that is permissible. And the idea is to try to obtain any information that is relevant. Now, that's a tall order, but you have to assess what's important to you. Now, you know, like, there are these people who ask questions, and I get it with Shidduchim all the time, where they ask me, you know, these 9 well-thought-out questions. They're reading it off a piece of paper. You can hear her flipping through the paper. And then she says, is there anything I forgot to ask you? And I want to say, like, how do I know? Like, you know. But they'll say that. Or, what would you ask me if the roles were reversed? Or they'll say something like, I'm not sure, but is there anything I'm not aware of that I should be asking, as if they don't even know me, and they're asking me to mentor them on how to ask questions from myself. So that's not my obligation necessarily, but depending upon, you know, if it's someone I really know or whatever, maybe it would be different. But so here's the thing. You really need, if you're the one, I'm talking to you, you're the one asking the question. You really need to put thought and that the question should be relevant, because you may hear negative information, and if the information is not relevant to you, guess what? You're hearing Lashon Hara, Min HaTorah. There's no ifs, ands, or buts. Like, you're asking for information that's not relevant to you. You might as well say, hey, can we gossip about Bob? You know, because the information you're asking for is not relevant. You can only ask about Bob what's relevant to what you need. So really, forethought has to go to make sure that there's relevance to the questions at hand. That's why I recommend that before you call, if you're interviewing someone for a job, or you're asking a coworker about another person, and we'll get to that, there's a whole topic about competitiveness and whether they're mechaven l'shem shemayim and all that. But the point is, it has to be relevant. Now, really, the halacha is clear that every effort should be made to ask all necessary questions. Don't be lazy. You really want to protect yourself. You can't come after the fact and say, gosh, I wish I would have known. Questions should be clear so that the answers are purposeful and necessary. Meaning, if you're not clear and you say a general or vague question and they answer thinking that part of that is what you need and really it was a whole different part of the question that you needed, that would be lashon hara. I'm going to stop here and I'm going to floor questions. We really have a little bit more on the asking and then a lot on responding, so hopefully if I'm asked to come back next year, we have where to continue from. Okay, yes, what's your question back there? What's your name, sir?
Mac?
Yeah.
Sam.
Okay, hi, yes, Sam, yeah. Okay, I see you now, yes.
I'm going to ask about your eyesight.
Right, I need new glasses, but go ahead. The obligation is the following. Literally, it's lifnei iver lo sitein michshol, which means like this. I'll give you an example. Let's say they're literally, although this is not what the pasuk literally means, you see a blind man walking across the street and he's about to trip over a stumbling block. Did he turn around and say, Sam, is there a stumbling block in front of me? No, he did not. Yet you have information that you're privy to that the blind man is not, and if you withhold that information, you transgress. Even though you didn't place it there, it's as if you did because you have information that could have removed it from his path. And therefore, Chazal tell us that a person who has information is obligated to initiate, volunteer, and share that information where applicable, as we said, to prevent them from possible harm. Well, I mean, that too, but that's not... That's right, that's secondary, and you know, you could say, V'alachta v'dracha, of course. That's one aspect of it. It's more than that. There's also Nisr of Losamo Adam Reyecha, which the Chafetz Chaim brings B'Shem the Rishonim as Afilu B'Mominus and Afilu B'Other Thing, meaning you're not allowed to sit by idly while you watch your friend incur some sort of potential loss. So there's a truly two chiyuvim. Now there's a greater lifnei iver when someone asks you and you give them poor advice. That's another definition of lifnei iver, but what I said is enough. Yes? A serious what?
A deficit. A serious.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Deficit. Okay.
You.
Wait. But you're the one who's contacting them to.
No. I know that this is happening.
Oh. Okay.
They didn't call me to ask.
They didn't call you.
I know.
You know.
That this is happening.
It's already happening. It's happening.
It's in the process of happening.
Call them. May Hashem be with you. Yes.
Can you do extensive research of certain world information like the higher?
So,
or look at, you know, if you read the internet research, you may come up with stuff that's irrelevant.
Oh, I don't like internet. That's a whole topic. Because anybody can put anything there. I really don't like it. That's like calling someone's ex-spouse for information about them. What do you think you're going to hear? You're going to hear an honest opinion? I mean, you know, you can't. You're not allowed to ask a competitor, I mean, a papashtus, you know, someone who's going to say, you know, they're going to lie or they're not going to be chavim l'toelis, even if they're going to tell the truth, but it's rare they're going to tell the truth. They're going to exaggerate and possibly lie. But if your question is, how much information am I allowed to, I mean, we didn't get to that, but you're allowed to ask as much as you feel you need to make an educated decision. So in other words, once you have enough information, you really would need to stop calling. But let's say you want to call another party for clarity. Let's say you're calling for an employee and you feel you don't have enough, you've already called three people, but you feel a fourth or a fifth might help, okay? But if you feel like, I'm not hiring them, even if Moshe and Aharon come down from Har Sinai and tell me this person is great, I'm done, I heard enough, then why are you calling two more people to hear more negative information about this person? You've made up your mind. And you're not, and seriously, you don't think you're changing, you know, although me the Atzar Snapsho, you know, you're not changing your mind. Yeah?
How does it change if you're speaking about an non-Jew or to an non-Jew?
Can I answer that later when I'm not on camera and tape? Yeah, next, yes.
What if the information falls under the category that it's not crucial, that it will be blamed for it in the end? Like, where
you'll be blamed?
No, like an employer, or whatever you tried to do, or when you go to the job, will come back to you and say, why didn't you give me this information or like that?
Why didn't you?
Right. The information.
You want to say Rabbi Stengel told me I'm not allowed to?
No,
all right. They're going to be angry at you? If the halacha does not allow you to share it, you're not allowed to share it. I thought you were asking the other way around. I'm afraid to warn this person because this person is not private, and they're going to tell the person that I told them, I warned them.
No.
Then you're not obligated to put yourself in harm's way. But your question is the other way around. No. Yeah, I understood. Right. So you don't, you can't be over an isser simply because you're going to be in an uncomfortable situation. Like, oh, you're going to yell at me? Okay, I will tell you this person's secret. Seriously?
As to what point? Like, the point where you lose a friendship, you lose your job, you lose your... Like, how far are you into that?
Really, if it's us or a person's a chayev to... I hope it wouldn't come to that. You should be able to speak to your boss and explain to him. But really, you're not allowed to cause someone harm, even if it's at the cost of your job. But hopefully, it really should not come to that. And many people tell me, like, you know, one girl called me up and said, everyone speaks Lashon Hara at my job, and I'm afraid I'm going to get fired if I don't. I said, really? Think about it. Will you get fired? Actually, no. Would your boss respect you if you kept it up? Actually, I think he would. Okay, there you go. So yeah. Yes. Yes.
I get asked for recommendations for contractors all the time when I work. And sometimes I have firsthand negative information about this. They just will not be happy. Or I've heard multiple complaints about someone. Sometimes it's all secondhand where I've had clients. I haven't had the first one, other clients have.
All right, so what's your question?
So my question, when am I allowed to say people were asking for recommendations?
I mean...
Sometimes they ask, okay, what
Mrs. Newman,
what
that's a little vague.
Okay,
I can't...
What about person A?
Right, I can't...
I know that person A may have some honesty issues.
That's still very vague. I would need to have a conversation with you if you have a specific question. That's very... Okay, we will. I guess we will. Okay, yes.
Last question.
Yeah, okay, you're the moderator. Yeah. I would need to give a whole... There's a lot to say. It really, it's not... I mean, it's a 50-minute lecture, and it's almost impossible to cover all the topics. It just is. I'm hearing that other presenters had similar issues. Okay. Am I allowed to... I think I'm allowed to say that. I'll take one more question. Okay. Yes. I'm sorry, a louder, please. The current job does not need intelligence or confidence. But there's room for people. They're not, so they won't promote this person. They want people that they're able to promote. I mean, and otherwise they're going to let the person go if they're not promotable. If they're not going to let the person go, then you can't say. If they're going to let the person go, then you can. Then it's a waste of their time. That's like, so I want someone who's trainable to reach a certain point. Then I'm allowed to tell them, yeah. Okay.